And before we move into the show today, Hydera is a Swiss-based managed cloud company that enables you to rapidly build and scale applications using Java, PHP, Ruby, Node.js, or Python. Their platform as a service automates all complex system administration tasks, freeing you to focus solely on coding without worrying about hosting. With flexible billing, an intuitive interface, data security, and a 24/7 365 support team, Hydera provides everything you need for business success. You can learn more on Hydera.io, Hydora.io. Now, let's move into the show.
You know, one of the key focuses of MENA protocol is around programmable privacy and ZK programmability, and just the ability to use MENA to verify and store proofs. But coming back to one of its initial features, the succinct and small size, MENA protocol can operate as an L1, could operate as an L2. A proof of the entire state of the blockchain can be easily stored within a smart contract in another chain, and that just provides countless opportunities for interoperability. It was really built for scalability with decentralization in mind, and those are, I think, some of the biggest challenges around blockchain today.
I am really excited about this episode, which is a deep dive into the topic of zero knowledge through the lens of one of its main actors, the MENA protocol and its ecosystem, supported by the MENA Foundation. In this conversation, I have the chance to welcome Kurt Hemeker, who is the Chief Operating Officer at the MENA Foundation. Kurt brings over 2 decades of global business experience, including roles at the Facebook-backed Diem stablecoin project and PayPal, to his new role as CEO of the MENA Foundation. With their holistic zero-knowledge product suite, including ZK apps, ZK bridges, and ZK oracles, MENA is positioned to become the powerhouse for privacy and security in Web3. MENA has continuously shown signs of massive potential with one of the most efficient ZK proving technologies out there, world-class teams, and unparalleled success at building a global community. MENA is the world's lightest blockchain powered by participants. Rather than apply brute computing force, MENA uses advanced cryptography and recursive ZK-SNARKs to design an entire blockchain that is about 22 kilobytes, the size of a couple of tweets. It is the first layer 1 to enable efficient implementation and easy programmability of zero-knowledge smart contracts. With its unique privacy features and ability to connect to any website, MENA is building a private gateway between the real world and crypto and the secure democratic future. In this episode, we talk about what brought Kurt to crypto, the privacy in the digital age and the ethics of technology, decentralization, trust and power distribution, how MENA is different from other ZK players. We also go into the technical details of how to build on the MENA protocol, use cases spanning DeFi, gaming, AI, logistics and supply chain, but also healthcare, the strategies to build and incentivize the MENA community, plus so much more. Let's get into the episode right now. In this first part, Kurt tells us about what brought him to crypto and his key takeaways and learnings from the Facebook-backed Diem project.
It's always, I think, a super interesting topic to when you're discussing with folks within crypto what brought them to the industry. And there's just so many aspects to it, whether you're talking about macroeconomics, about the technology, about the evolution in regulation. So I've actually been around for quite a few phases of the development of the web, from Web 1 to Web 2 to Web 3. And I think, you know, like a lot of folks, when the first white paper came out from Satoshi and Bitcoin became available, I just became quite interested in it initially, quite honestly, as a speculator. And then also the fact that that white paper happened kind of, you know, really sort of seemed to have come about as a result of the 2008 crash and an answer to the next evolution of how basically money, programmable money, would develop across the world. So, and then I've had an interesting background starting from my studies, which were in encryption, doing firmware development for the U.S. Air Force and avionics, and sort of gradually moved over to a business, more the business side of things. And worked for a while in mobile payments, worked for a telecoms operator in Switzerland when the market was liberalizing. I worked for one of the competitors for the liberalized market to start offering fixed line services. And then from there, I actually moved into mobile content and mobile payments, working with a company called Zong that was founded in Geneva and then eventually acquired by PayPal, where I was working for a number of years, then still working kind of the bridge between mobile telephone operators, mobile telephone networks, and payments, and working how we could link two technologies. And that really, a lot of the work there involved working with near-field communications, how that could be used for payments on mobile devices. And then when the Libra DM project was starting, I was kind of in the right place at the right time with the right background. You know, this was a project initially destined to be headquartered, run out of Switzerland in Geneva, having had experience in blockchain already a bit, having experience in a lot of the relevant technology. Initially joined the project before it was announced in 2019. And in the start, I was leading business development and just kind of on the grounds, doing a lot of the legwork, getting things set up with some of the other initial folks that were involved, notably Bertrand Perez, who was the initial managing director of that. And again, that was an interesting, again, back to what I was saying before about blockchain and crypto and what brings people to it. That was certainly an interesting project. It had a large social impact mission associated with it in terms of bringing value back and looking very forward-looking in being able to help bank the large populations of unbanked and underserved parts of society across the globe. And then, as everyone knows, that was a big wake-up call to regulators across the world, to central banks, to governments, to policymakers, that, hey, we better start taking this technology seriously. And what attracted me personally to that was, again, having taken a look at again, the early Bitcoin and Ethereum, was like, hey, this is a really cool technology. We've never really seen payments working on the internet. The internet democratized the access to information, to communication, but there was still an issue with value transfer and money and programmable money. And I thought, wow, here's a project that could start making use cases that really work. And love them or hate them, the organizations that were part of the Libra Association, what was first launched and, of course, ultimately was rebranded to DM, but you had Facebook, Uber, Spotify, Shopify, Lyft. And again, those organizations and the people working there, they know how to make services that people use, that people want to use. And I thought, wow, here's a project where we could start bringing the use of blockchain and crypto into the mainstream. And unfortunately, I think the project was probably slightly ahead of its time in terms of regulators around the world being ready for it. And then, you know, undeniably, even though the association itself was a separate independent entity, it did have a bit the shadow of Facebook over it. And, you know, Facebook definitely was not the most loved company within certain regulatory circles. So I think that was a challenge. But I think in summary, one of my favorite descriptions of that project comes from one of the folks that I had worked with a bit there, Dalia Malki, who was the chief technology officer. She was actually the inventor of the Hot Stuff consensus algorithm. But the way she described that project was, when you're sending a rocket to the sky, you're gonna light up the sky, right? Either the rocket just going up to the moon, or, you know, again, if it doesn't make it, if the rocket explodes, it's gonna light up the sky either way. And for sure, with that project, we lit up the whole sky.
Kurt explains how Mina's Zero Knowledge Product Suite, which employs advanced cryptography and ZK-SNARKs, fits into the broader debate about the ethics of technology and impacts the philosophical concept of privacy in the digital age.
So I just want to add that, you know, again, after having been part of the DM project, when I was looking for the next sort of the next adventure that I wanted to undertake, I stumbled across zero knowledge proofs, and I saw, wow, this is a really cool technology that is starting to take off. And when I spoke to the team at MENA Foundation and learned about their vision for programmable privacy, their approach to decentralization, and kind of the humble but very almost academic and intelligent approach that they were taking, I fell in love with the team and the project. And that leads to the philosophical concept of like privacy and what MENA is doing around that. And the mission of MENA Protocol is to become the privacy and security layer for Web3. And the reason why that's important, well, privacy is important, right? It's enshrined in many international and national agreements. It's recognized in even in the UN Declaration of Human Rights. And the promise of Web3, where many of us work, is to enable the ability for all of us to be able to decide and control what each of us wants to share about ourselves and with whom we want to share it. And typically the things we want to share are some aspect or some combination of our identity or our action. So, you know, identity, when you open up a bank account, you'll have to show your identity papers. Or even again, if we're talking about a bank account or a line of credit, you'll have to show some history of your transactions, right? And now sometimes some of those processes seem quite invasive. So Web3 is the evolution of allowing users to control more about which sensitive data they share, who they share it with, and how they share it. And the MENA protocol and community participants believe that users should have the ability to decide who they're sharing it with, particularly their personally identifiable information. And again, if that's not secured, it exposes one to issues such as identity theft, stolen funds. And so it's important to secure that by giving control to users. In terms of the ethics of technology and where does MENA's use of cryptography and ZK SNARKs fit into that? Well, again, by enabling users to transact and store data privately, they help individuals protect their privacy. And again, that's essential to ethical considerations. And MENA's use of ZK SNARKs offers enhanced privacy because it allows users to verify their data without revealing that data. And that's really important, particularly for individuals who might be in marginalized communities who also may be disproportionately impacted by privacy violations. So that's, you know, again, just back to the privacy point, that's a core, I think, ethical consideration. And then oftentimes when talking about ethics, people talk about environment as well. And MENA is a proof of stake blockchain. And the way it's built, proofs can be verified with very low computational resource and power from a web browser or a mobile device. So it's much more environmentally friendly than proof of work blockchains. And again, I think that's an important consideration.
MENA's mission to become the powerhouse for privacy and security in Web3 challenges traditional ideas about decentralization and power distribution and has philosophical implications, while the innovations in zero-knowledge technology contribute to the debate about the role of trust in decentralized systems.
We all know that Web2 was defined by centralized platforms controlling end users' data. And the transition from Web 2 to Web 3, which is underway right now, is representative of the evolution of the decentralization of that control. So giving that control and power to end users. And so the question is, how do we get to Web 3? Well, We get there by providing developers tools to create those decentralized applications that, again, they can write applications that give users ability to control that. And MENA Foundation, whose goal is to serve the MENA protocol, right? And it's important to note that the MENA protocol is not owned by anyone. It's a decentralized network and many different types of participants from it's permissionless. So you've got over 300 block producers, validators currently participating on the network, SNARK workers, developers creating zero-knowledge applications. And again, the MENA Foundation's role in that is to just help serve and empower that community, educate the community on zero-knowledge and how to use some of the tools developed on top of MENA for writing those applications.
If you'd like to listen to the full episode, please subscribe to our newsletter called Venture Notes,